Aloha, everyone, and welcome to Aquarian Radio at AquarianRadio.com. And this is an episode of the Experience Network, and I'm your host, Janet Carol Lesson. And today I have a very dear friend, Ruth Ann Friend, and she is a friend. She's been on our show many times. We met in person. We're having a good time. We are talking about experiencers. These are people that have had contact with extraterrestrials and the paranormal, dealing with the paranormal. And Ruth Ann and I are going to be discussing a lot of different things today, like how we can create awareness for experiencers so they can feel safe to tell their stories. And we're going to share about our own contact. And we're going to talk about the passing of Ruth Ann's friend David, who was a lifelong experiencer. And today is the anniversary of his passing over. This is David's crossing over date. So we're going to talk about what that means and Ruth Ann's life with David and how they're still connected even though he's on the other side, and that and more. So let me click on the button here for Ruth Ann and bring her on the show. Good afternoon, Ruth Ann. Good to see you again.
Oh, good afternoon. It's a beautiful day here today.
Yes, it's very nice here, too. In fact, it's quite warm. It's been freezing the last 3 weeks, and now it's hot. Summer has arrived. Yes, so what's the weather like there? You said it's nice. What's the temperature?
Oh, I think today it's in the late 70s, but it has been like 83 and 84, which is my kind of weather. I just love it right in the 80s there. Before it gets really hot.
Yes, it's 82 right now here in this room. So not sure what the weather is outside, but in this room it's 82. So that's not too bad. It's kind of pleasant. So so this is the anniversary of David's crossing. How about we'll do some things for David, and you can tell our listeners a little bit about David, your son, and his life and what he meant to you, what you still mean to each other, even though he's passed. And how many years ago did he cross over?
It's been 10 years today.
The 10-year point. Wow. Well, go ahead and talk to us about David.
Well, one wonderful thing about our life and the gifts we were given to work on this planet is that we're still in communication all the time, and that he still works with me. If I am working in my Reiki, his spirit is always there also. He helps me when things get tough, any kind of problem, and I will hear him, and many times I see him and hear him. It just depends how he's going to talk to me. But came for his birthday, and I always kid him because he always looks like he's 20 years old, even though he passed over young. But he's always smiling this million-dollar smile and sending his love. And this day is also a really special day because it's also his sister's birthday, my daughter. And it was Palm Sunday, also the day he chose to cross over. So we have my daughter's birthday and David's birthday of going into his other life. And I think it's wonderful because he is such a spiritual being. So it's sad, but it's only sad because I can't reach him in our human solid form, but I think I'm really blessed to be able to continue on our work together and to see him and hear him the way that I get to.
Yeah, that is a blessing. My parents have crossed over, and I've worked with people that have crossed. Some who are famous, some unknown, and it's very interesting when they come through. Now, you said David. Oh, how old would David be if he were still alive in this life?
Well, he passed at 43, so I can't hardly believe he would be 53.
He'd be 53,
Yeah, I married at 16, so I had an early start with family, but I have three daughters also, so he was very bonded with the entire family. I mean, he was just so loving to everybody and so good to everybody, and needless to say, we're all very, very proud of him and his work.
So you both were involved with extraterrestrials, so I wanted to talk to our listeners and tell them how there's crossover between the living and the dead and extraterrestrials, and we're talking about people and beings and even humans that can go over into other dimensions. So when you're dead, and correct me if I'm wrong, or you have a different understanding, you're actually, residing in a different dimension, but the discarded people who have passed, can more readily and easily travel between dimensions, or so it appears that they can. But actually, if you go into a practice or like meditation or whatever it is, and you'll realize that you yourself can cross into other dimensions. And that's what I've been finding in my work as a contactee experiencer, that often when it seems like I'm sleeping, I'm either on board a craft, I find myself on other planets, I'm working another job, I have a position on the council. There's all these things that happen. Tell us more about what you and David were doing with the extraterrestrials. What was your life's work, and how are you continuing that till this day?
Yes, we do. I love my work. David loved the work, too. We were never in any fear of anything because we knew them as our other family. We were really excited to go with them, and they came often, sometimes three times a week. They were always coming to get us to take us to our teachers, and they were teaching us many things. I can remember the hieroglyphics. There was so much of that inside the ship, sometimes even outside on a craft. There was all kinds of what looked like to me that I remember was Greek language, all kinds of languages that I didn't think I had seen before, but they corrected me and said, "You have known all this before, both of you." So it was like going back in for a review. I have never had an abduction. They were only loving visits and to teach us. Another thing, they were very particular about, they never would take us on a ship or do anything without our permission. And that was a big thing with them. Always had to have permission. I feel bad for the people who have experienced negative beings and negative things, but we never had that happen ever, so we were very well protected. And they would
let me ask you some questions on that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just I think that is such a critical point to bring to our listeners. They're a whole group of experiencers that are in the same category as you and me. I'm not abducted. I'm not a victim. I go there. It's part of my existence. It's part of my life or my lives, or who I am as a eternal being. And it's very my interaction is very kind and loving. Whenever I had a perceived negative response to anything, I would go with my husband, who is a psychotherapist, a hypnotherapist, and I'd say, let's look at that again, because I'm not sure I'm describing that accurately. So there was one, I met a reptilian one time, and I had an adverse reaction to this poor fellow. And when I finally went and looked at it under hypnosis and our interactions, he never did anything, bad to me. Nothing ever. It was all my responses. And so when I took responsibility for how I was reacting, and, you know, got comfortable with that. Then he finally came to me again, and we had a very loving interaction. It was spiritual. It wasn't anything physical or sexual. It was very spiritual. It was about our connection throughout eternity. So, but sometimes, let's address what's going on from your understanding. What happens when people perceive it as abduction? What's your understanding of that? I know you've talked to other people, right, that have had these perceptions?
Oh, yeah. People who have had negative experience, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they are expressing it as negative. Well, I'll just say what I find out. There is a government military program, and sometimes, you know, those people get confused with the extraterrestrials. But when it's purely extraterrestrial, thus far, you know, most people I've interviewed, and I've been interviewing thousands now, and I work with, the, you know, people in hypnosis and in regression, and the group called FREE, that is the research group that was founded by Dr. Edgar Mitchell. They've done a lot of research into it, and they find that once you have an understanding, and these are the extraterrestrial encounters, you know, like huge percentage, are good, you know, are kind, loving, conscious interchanges. Some of them, they call my labs, run into the negative, but even those are not as, some of them are not as bad as perceived. There are, I don't want to negate anybody's experience out there. If you've had negative experiences, I'm not here to define you, but I'm just talking about the what we're finding when we work with people, or if we go and we do interviews with them, or we do regressions, a lot of them are saying, oh, you know, that's not what was really going on, that I was, you know, in a fear response. So anyway, back to you.
Well, you know, that reminds me of Travis Walton when we were talking one time, and I know he's talked about it when he first went with them, when they caught him in their beam of light, and they really didn't want him. And you know the story, you know, Travis ended up being gone about 5 days. Later on mentioned that he realized that when he came to, and he had this band or whatever it was across his chest, and there were, I think, four around him, the first thing I think anybody would have would be terror, you know. They wouldn't, you know, couldn't possibly understand. But as times went on, he mentioned in one of his talks that it took him a while to understand or to change his thinking that they were trying to help him, not hurt him. So I wonder sometimes, since I've never had an abduction, but I've heard stories like you have, but I wonder if I would think that permission would be given beforehand, but maybe not remembered. On some of the cases, I sure can't speak for any really, but this is my thoughts. And of course, that memory was taken away, you know, just like a lot of our memories they had to bring back to us in those cases. I don't know if you think about that way or not, that maybe they don't remember ever giving their permission, but that they had at some point, maybe before birth or whatever.
Yes, that's what we find when we do regression hypnotherapy. We don't ever leave the witness. We let them, you know, tarry in their own memories and come to their own conclusions, because that's not ethical. But a lot of times we find they say, oh, yeah, I did give permission, or that was my agreement before I came into 3D physicality, or I'm actually a hybrid and I'm one of them. And I came down here because, you know, I'm on a mission. Or there's all kinds of things that emerge under hypnosis. But with Travis, I interviewed him several times. But one time, we really went deep in the interview. It was almost like he was hypnotized, but he got super relaxed. And he realized that that he had actually died. Somehow that was an accident, that the being hit him and killed him. And so they took him on board to revive him and to heal him. He had severe wounds, and that's why he was gone so long, because they had to keep him until he was stable. And then they returned him, and they returned him outside of town, but close enough that he could, you know, get to a, it's like they knew there was a nearby phone booth. You know, imagine trying to find a phone booth now, but they were aware of the forms of communication. It's almost like Star Trek, right? They know what the technology is like and what it was like being in that society. So they knew to drop him off, you know, on the road, but where he wouldn't get run over, you know, and where he could go to make a call to his friend. So, you know, that's one of the prime cases. Thanks for reminding me about, you know, an abduction, right? But actually there was, you know, another motivation. I often think of my cats, if I, when I take them to the vet, I think that they feel like they're being abducted by aliens. They go there and these strange people, and they're poking and prodding at them, and they get mad at me. What did you do? And they come home and they sulk, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, you know, whatever. So, yeah. Let's go back in time. Your first time you experienced extraterrestrial, were you alone? Were you with David? Let's go revisit your story a little bit and see how it unfolded.
Well, I was alone. I was just a little girl. I didn't, of course, understand what was happening. But I can tell you that I just loved them. I felt this familiar love, just like any child for a parent or any kind of a family relation. I loved every time they came. I didn't think about even talking about it ever, to my knowledge, because I was just small. And I believe for me that
how
was my normal.
You?
I
how
think I can
you?
Remember maybe 5, 6 years, somewhere right in there. And I just was, I just couldn't hardly wait till they came back. So that was how mine started. And there would be...
Were you indoors or outdoors?
Oh, yeah.
What was going on?
I was usually put in bed for the night. And that's when that would happen. And I just loved being up in this big, I didn't know it was called universe or anything else. But I loved it. And never had, like I said, any fear of it. At all. Then my son, years later, of course, when he was born, I had never talked about any of this to any of my family members or anything. And all of a sudden, I find out when he's in the Air Force that he's seeing the UFOs and so on. And that's when we both revealed what had been happening to us, you know. So from then on, we generally were always together, whether he lived where I lived or whether he was he moved around living after he got out of the service for a little bit until he got ill. But, you know, we would be traveling together, or if he did have a separate occasion that he wanted to tell me about, he would call me immediately and tell me. The thing I just love to this day is because they did take us mostly together from then on, they did work on him, and even when he had the DOA, that's why he was back too, like you were mentioning earlier, you know, about working on Travis. They worked on me many too, and I have so many messages they wrote in my notebooks. We would not only see him, hear him, speak to him that way, listen to them, and have them, they were teaching. I also had so many things they would write, and they always told me to transcribe, and then they would transcribe back what they wanted me to write down. I did not know for years, didn't even think of it about ever writing a book, but they knew why they were having me do this, you know, of course. So that's why I have these notebooks and notebooks of information that they have written. They have signed in their universal language. They also explained to us at one point, my son and I, how we're a product of the universe. And they also said, we learn from you as we do you on Earth. I mean, so in other words, we were learning from each other is what they were trying to say there.
Right. Uh-huh.
And they also wrote, we have love for you, old soul. We are honored. So they always called us their old souls. They also let us know they knew what love means and what it's about. All of these things.
What did they look like?
Different species, and some of them were very tall. The councils were very tall, the different councils that came and said that we belonged with. And that went from the Tri-Council, the Astric Council, I'm trying to think of a couple more names of them. I'll think of it in a minute.
Yeah.
But along with all this going on, when people say, well, where do you come from and all that? And that's when they said to us, but you're from many worlds. So I never know exactly where to say we're from, because that was the answer. And they did mention at one point that Zeron, Zeron, I think we talked a little bit about that before. And I'm glad that you had heard that word, because I'd never heard it other than from our ET family. But they would tell us that we had more education to do in the mountains. They would do that, and they would take us to the mountains quite a bit. And they said we had to have more education, because then they would be able to show us more inside of the mountains. Some of the things that they erased from our memory, but a lot of it we had written and we remembered. But I think
I want to slow this down. Okay, go. You think the part of it, and then I want to ask you some questions. Go ahead. You think the part about what?
Oh, I was going to mention the part about when they said we have love for you, O soul, and we are honored, and that they know what love means. To me, that was just the tears came, because the ones that were working with us, all these many different ones, you can look in their eyes, and the love is so tremendous. And I think you know exactly, too, what I mean, because you've had the experiences.
Yes, I want to go back, and I'll start with that one first. Yes, when you look into their souls, or when I do, I'll talk from an eye perspective. I see all the way to creation. I see all the way to source and the whole cosmos. And it's like you fall into each other's eyes. You remember everything, and then there's just these tears that flow out of your eyes, because it's so beautiful. It's beyond, you know, it's beyond any concept of heaven. It's just like swimming in divine love and being totally conscious. So I've had those samadhi type experiences of oneness with these divine beings that are, you know, they're way kind of above third dimensional physicality. They're probably from the higher dimensions, the higher realms, and so I interact with them. So you have been a part of these councils. I am involved with a lot of different councils. I know one day I said, what's the name of this council? Or this? They said it's called the Federation of Planets of Love and Light. And I thought it was kind of corny. I laughed. But I said, yeah, that's what it is. Even though you laugh, it's the Federation of Planets of Love and Light. So these are the ones, the planets that have unified, that have their... I was watching a comedian. He said, I'm woke. Yes, these are the beings that are awakened. They are awake. They are conscious. And they are unified. And they are here to help other beings that are not awake. become conscious. So yes, they send people down, souls down, thread of consciousness down, and you have lifetimes in here, or you come in completely conscious. You don't always go through the veil of forgetfulness, go unconscious and have amnesia. Some of these beings come down conscious. So when you mentioned that they said that you are from many planets, I understand that one completely, because what I have come to learn is that I'm a multidimensional being, simultaneously having many experiences and incarnations on many planets. Now that I'm on the radio with you, I'm focused on this avatar, this life, and the information we're sharing. But, you know, our natural ability is to do that on many levels and many places. So that was revolutionary. Let me see what else you said. So, yes, they do know about love. We are a product of the universe. Oh, yes, tall. It seems that the more conscious and spiritually advanced the beings are, when they show up in a form that I can experience visually, right? They're extremely beautiful and they're very tall. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my beings kind of have an inner light. It's almost like the molecules of their skin are moving, so they're luminescent. And I'm often struck by their beauty. Their beauty just makes me tear up and feel extreme divine love. And I think part of that is, I learned from reading the material by Dr. Michael Newton Institute. When we agree to come into this level of density, we're in these skin encapsulated forms, these bodies, and we're thick skinned, right? But other beings, mm-hmm. they're more permeable, so they can literally feel each other because they don't have these thick skins. Enabled us to have that total sense of separation. And so this separate self sense allows us to be in the illusion that we are not each other, because our natural state is loving oneness, and we feel each other. So here we don't feel each other, and that allows us to do crazy things like hit each other or even kill each other, but it also allows us to find love on a stronger, deeper, higher level, because we're coming to the point of love when we're feeling so totally separate. And then we can experience unity, consciousness, and oneness when we love each other, or especially in romantic love, when you make love. So let me see if there's anything else. So I was a little girl as well. I was 4 years old. They took me broad daylight out of my yard. I was picking flowers. I was singing songs to God that I made up, a little four-year-old kid singing. And it was the most, I wasn't abducted. I just was teleported or found myself there. I maybe even transported myself. Did you ever think about that, Ruth? That you
yes.
might be
yes. uh-huh.
desiring contact and make
we
it
can
happen.
Do that.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's all the feedback I want to do. I'm making notes as you talk, but I really would like to deconstruct this. So you had separate experiences for years, and then David,
mm-hmm.
how old was David when he started having experiences?
I think he was small, but because the more he talked, I think he started also when he was small. I mean, when he was 5 years old, I mentioned before that he looked at us and he said, I'm going to die young. He said, I won't live very long. And he even knew then, although I didn't, I wasn't remembering it, that we would work together through our lives. He knew all that, and he knew pretty well that he would go home on the day he chose. That was Palm Sunday and his sister's birthday, like I said. He was a very, very spiritual young man, loved everybody and helped him. But I agree that, just before I forget, the planet you mentioned, yes, I am aware of, and when you ask me about some of the higher-ups, I call them the council members. To me, when I always looked at them, they looked their face more human. and they were very tall. And the Great Traveler always had all this light shooting out around him, and I could see these little bitty particles on his this long garment he wore. And I asked him what they were one time, and he said zillions. And I was thinking in my mind, we have a human word that's millions, but he had his word that what that was, that were zillions. But
zillions.
I wanted to ask you something.
Sure.
I know to this day myself, I've never adjusted fully to be here, and I wanted to know if you feel that way sometimes.
Oh, boy. I call it the stranger in a strange land phenomenon. And the longer I live, the more it's like, what am I doing here? Who are these people? They're so crazy. Because I'm so connected with higher ways of living, higher society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're at a level zero civilization. I'm in these civilizations where everybody's getting along. There's no racism. There's no rape or war or violence or guns or the need for guns, and you know, everybody just that would be considered like a primitive being, like so animalistic, the way that we, the natural human beings in this current 21st civilization, act and respond to each other. The beings that I where I'm from, it's like this is so primitive. And not to say that I'm better, because on the highest level we're all same. It's just, it boggles my mind on a, you know, this level that this society is so primitive. And I remember when I was a little girl, I saw, you know, Buck Rogers and stuff like that when I was real little, right? And when they started to launch the satellites into space, there was once a television show, it was black and white, a little TV we used to watch in the back room. I was born in 54, so... And they showed all these rockets crashing to the earth. And I turned and I looked at my brother, my sister, and my mother, my father, and tears were running down my cheeks. And I go, what? You're kidding me. We don't even have space travel yet? And I was bawling. I was like brokenhearted because I had been up in space. And, you know, I'd been on these craft that are just everybody's loving and kind, and it's like, oh, I was just heartbroken. I get depressed sometimes.
Yeah.
I get anxious. It's like, when are we going to get it? When are we going to wake up? I get on my high horse. I get preachy. I get, and it's like, okay, well, just get it. You're down as a human. Don't be human. Forgive me if I act out anybody, but I'm suffering from the stranger in the strange land phenomenon, and I just don't understand why we're so mean to each other, why we have war.
I'm so glad that you said that, because it is really hard for me at times too, and I do get depressed at times. And I know before I came on tonight, David had been talking with me, and he said, you know, the secrets will continue to be known on Earth, but it's going to come little by little. In other words, you know, the real truth, it's just going to take forever, I think. And he says no one there wants to be patient, you know, because that's our human part. And he said the values that have been installed in the human brain, many of those are not functioning anymore, meaning all the problems in today's world, you know. But he said, please keep trust and have faith, he said, and relax, because that way things come sooner. But he said those have forgotten, and those people have forgotten who once knew that, and little can be done about that. But he said, be aware of your surroundings and don't believe everything you hear. He said, Earth carries many messengers of fear by those who are programmed in this way. I thought that was interesting because of how he put that. Earth carries many messengers of fear by those who are programmed in this way. And he said, each planet with life forms are doing their own part of existence. It is all different, but it is their way and for their growth to the next level. He said Earth is too controlling and has many facets of negative thought and programming. He said it's a controlling planet and with much envy, greed, money, and the life forms of humankind, many have lost their memories of how to live among others. He also went on to say, sadly, the planet's what known as beautiful spirit. I did not know that before, that it was known as beautiful spirit is no longer. Those left who are messengers of light are fighting the darkness daily in some way, which we know that's true. The new hybrid breeds of children are to be encountered and loved as they age to an adult. They are the hope of your world, and there will be many more to come yet. Please keep faith and hope alive. Your planet must survive, even to be rebuilt in the future if needed. Earth now is tired and worn, but it will be renewed in the future. And this will be an amazing adventure and take time, as it is known there. So again, humans need to be patient and send love and compassion to all and learn and hope they learn to believe that love is the key. Love, David. So I just wrote down what he wanted to say.
Can you type that up and send that to me? We'll put that on the page
sure.
for today. David was here, and this is what he said.
That's what he said.
I have chills.
That's your confirmation, isn't it? Yeah.
Last night I work at night really hard, and sometimes I'm like rearranging the universe. It's really weird. I find myself like reaching up to the right, and I'm pulling down a fabric of time and space or something, and I'm overwriting the universe. I'm doing this physical act. I'm almost like Mickey Mouse, the magician, what was that one? He was waving his wand. So I'm doing this stuff, and I wake up and go, what am I doing? But last night I was operating on the same way. I had watched an episode of This Is Us. And it was the final, it was on Netflix. It was the final episode before they, take a break for the summer. And a couple of the characters did this exercise where they explore the catastrophic. So they were going into a wedding, and they said, and they were all nervous. Everybody was doing their part, and the bride had disappeared. And they said, well, let's do this game we do, the catastrophic. And so the one character said, well, I imagine that the bride never comes back, and then her husband goes to the altar, and he's had heart problems in the past, so he has a heart attack. And so they were doing all this catastrophic stuff, and they would go back and forth, and each person getting worse and worse. And then at the end of it, you let go of it, right? Let go of it. So I found myself after a night of dreaming. It was, I could see that dawn was coming, but I still was tired, so I went back to sleep. And I was doing that, and I was going down all these negative timelines, like what David just said, we're once known as the beautiful spirit, but I was switching them, and I was doing that process of just going, okay, here's the negative timeline. Let's just go and take it to the end. It blows up, the total dystopian society. I was just going there, but like once I went and expressed it, it dissolved. And so now I'm back here and I'm talking to you, was that real or is that just a potentiality? And here's David talking about, and when David said that we once were known as the beautiful spirit, I said, David, I just took it last night to beautiful spirit once again. So I don't know what I'm doing tonight, but
gave you a big confirmation that you knew there. That was great. I had written down just a few messages when I talk about how they would teach us and so on. It might help people listening
yes.
to know how we got things. Okay, I wrote them down. I would never change a word of any of them, and we got them for years and years. But this one says transmission. You and the male offspring are elevating as projected. Do not second-guess your intuitive gifts. You both will be honored as guests in our galactical celebration. Journey well, end of transmission. That same night, I woke up to a popping sound, and the High Council, they were above me in a circle, kind of over me like they do at times. I've seen them do this many, many times. And they told me at that time to go ahead and transcribe them because they would have me write down their words many times. So they said, go ahead and transcribe my words. And then they would transcribe their information back to me. So the next message was the next night. And it starts off, yes, child lesson. Lesson four begins tonight. To know one is from the stars is a revelation. Your male offspring knows this. Keep on with your work. July holds the key to much. We are going to help you both with problems. The male offspring's membrane is nearly gone, and we are going to work on it to be evenly arranged, so no one believes this. Edgar Cayce will leave you a sign. Watch on the evening of July 7th at 10 p.m. Look at your sky. Bring the camera. We shall guide thee. We are always here for both of you. We are honored also. End of transmission. And I remember telling you Edgar Cayce's always been one of our very main teachers. The next day, they let us know that we went into the universal heavens. And that they're transforming us in astral travel. So they were working, I guess, more on that. And we both were speechless because, you know, this is, it was just all the time. So a few days later, another message came, and it was to Moonchild and Offspring. Subject, resolving matter evenly. Message, your emotional outburst will be realigned. The male offspring has a chemical block involved. If you give us your permission, we will realign him at the evening. We are working on you both to complete the lesson. Your human bodies have endured a lot throughout these new programs, and we apologize for any pain caused, for we are only helping you evolve to your fullest potential. Sign, the Universal Beings of Light. The next incoming message was this. The council bows before the honored guests that has endured and passed all the programs. Moonchild is now known as, and they had given me a specific name. The son will honor the mother with that title. As always in tradition with the Tri-Council and all the stars in the heavens dance tonight to celebrate the honor of the mother and son induction. So, you know, I could just go on and on with tubs of things, but the point that to me should get across what beautiful beings these are, that there's nothing but, like we talk about, the great love for the planet, for the people, working with experiencers like ourselves to get the word out. And that we're all connected. Every single thing is connected. And I don't know why that's so hard for people to accept in my mind. It doesn't take anything personal from anybody in my mind.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think to kind of answer that a little bit is that people feel so separate. They feel so lonely. They just
have bought the
illusion that they are completely separate and they're not connected. And part of that is perhaps design of the governments to further alienate people from each other and to orchestrate things so that we get more into the drug culture, the drugs, whether they're pharmaceuticals or illegal drugs or whatever they tend to separate you from each other, create illnesses, create disease, create conflict and drama. So I see that those dynamics acting out in a lot of families, even in my friends, you know. And so I'm always like running away from that. I don't hang out with that. I don't hang out with negativity. You know, I don't I have strong boundaries.
Yeah.
I don't tolerate abuse. And I did at one point when I was in my 30s and 40s. I had very violent ex-husbands and boyfriends. And it was only until when I met Dr. Lesson that I finally went into the origins of a lot of my trauma. And my mother was undiagnosed schizophrenic, so she would act out and do things, and that's why I tolerated it, because part of me thought it was normal. But that's also why the ETs were there, because they would come in and do intervention, and my mother had killed me a couple times within her rages, being unconscious, and they would just help me come back in my body, and I'd fix my body, and I'd pop up, and so she finally gave up, you know, because I just kept coming back to life, you know, it freaked her out, and then it's like, stopped acting out in a lot of ways. But I've integrated that all, because I had to learn how to do all that. That was part of my consciousness path to learn. So it's okay, you know, the pain doesn't last. It's voluntary, and so now I'm in a position of divine love and forgiveness of even my mother and the perpetrators, because it's part of this multi-generational dysfunction. And that's, I think, what David was talking about, that we have the patient, that there's this extreme negativity, and he says it's going to take over. The values installed in the human brain, there was something about that, they're not valid anymore. People have forgotten. Anyway, I forget. I wasn't able to write fast enough to get everything you said, but it was just such beautiful words from David today.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Thank you for sharing today, David.
I'll type that up to you and send it to you. I know, I bet you're familiar with this too. I had made a note here about when they would take us to the underground cities, or into space, where they had the magnificent ones. They almost look like glass or crystal.
Well, let's talk about the underground, because I've been underground a lot. And
we did too.
I would astrally project and go out my crown chakra, and I would literally go down to my house into the basement, and there was a crawl space, and somehow I went through there. You know, my human form couldn't do it without, you know, encountering all these spiders, but I'd go in my astral form, and I'd just go beyond the crawl space, and then it opened up into a cavern, and there were all these huge vats of, like giants had made them, vats of beer or wine or something, and they were leaking, and there was giant bricks. I remember extreme detail, because I did it all the time. I would go lightly for years. So tell me about your experiences.
Well, I know that on the underground cities here, I know the ETs would always tell us that we knew these places, that we'd been there so many times before. This is when a lot of the memories were coming back, what they always called in portions, because they constantly was saying how the human brain can process slowly, you know, processes things so slowly, so they had to go a little bit at a time. But I remember how beautiful, I thought in my mind, a lot of them looked like castles almost. They were just so beautiful. I remember going in, and I was looking at what I was walking on. Now, to me, the floors looked almost like a marble. And I don't know how to describe them other than that. But I really loved all of that, and especially to know that that I had been there many, many times before, and they were reminding me by bringing us both back and letting us see where we've been so many times. I think it's like a lot of the universal language that they were teaching us. And they told us, you know, you both have used this many times before, but it was just bringing it back little by little. Or in the ships when they showed the screens and would have us watch those. You know, I had something happen really, really nice about being in the ships. I wrote about it in one of my books, but I looked on that panel and there was like hands, two hands, and they were embedded in some type, I'll call metal, who knows what it was in the ship. And these symbols had a lot to do with traveling in the UFOs mm-hmm. in the ships. By golly, I had written about that in that book that I wrote. And if they, I had on the TV the other night, and I don't even know what program it was on, but something come up, somebody else, about these hands. And they were some type of symbol that they had seen in the ship. So I was really happy to to hear that, you know, to
validation.
Be able to, oh, good, yeah, come, yeah. And I remember the one main ET, he was always so protective, and he would explain things in more detail than others. And I loved the way he would talk to me and protect me. And even when we were out of the ship, sometimes we would be in those mountains and where there was a lot of foliage. I don't know if you remember. I would just be in this foliage, David and I, huge, huge leaves on these plants, enormous leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Everything was so big. And I remember there was a little stream or some kind of water we came to, and it was a little bit rough terrain. And I remember when I stepped out to step on a rock in the water to cross it, first he took my hand, and he wouldn't let me go across unless he was holding my hand. And I remember looking down at those long fingers, those digits, and how his hand looked when he took mine. And I thought, how wonderful the love they have and the caring, you know, for us. And I was overwhelmed. But yeah, we went many, many places, and that they seem to want to give us more information and have us remember more of that information before they would take us further into the mountains and under the water and things like that.
I think they don't want you to be frightened at all. So that's why they go very slow with you. So you, because we're in a form that suffers from amnesia, and we're
mm-hmm.
always forgetting and remembering. But at some point, you reach kind of like the saturation point, and the memories flood back, and then you don't forget them. But that's also part of that stranger in a strange land phenomenon, because now, you know, you're awake, you have all these memories, and you can't even share them with most people, because they'll think you're crazy, or they'll try to institutionalize you or something. But so the mountains have been really, that's why I wouldn't move to a place that was flat. I think that what you're describing, I've always had to have mountains. I've had visions of these beautiful buildings that were like castles, like you were talking about earlier. Vimanas, they have these Vimanas, which are full cities that will come down mm-hmm. and land on a mountaintop. They'll just land on a mountaintop, and then the villages will form around them, and they'll have everything there already, the castles. And somehow, I guess they travel through time and space, and so it's shielded somehow, you know, energy shields or something, so they don't, there's no harm that ever happens to the structures, and the people can come and go. And I remember being part of one of the Vimanas that settled. It was like a clear memory, and we settled in England, and that was Camelot. That's why it's called the Once and Future Camelot, because it disappeared, right? They can't really find the ruins of Camelot. It's just all hypothetical, because it was a mountain, a Vimana, that was shaped like a mountain, and it took off. So anyway,
yeah.
But they give me all these revelations about what was going on. So tell me a little bit more about the mountains. So were they here in the on the earth?
You know, I can't really tell you exactly where they were. I only remember the parts of being there, going there, and of them showing us a little bit at a time. I'm not sure the location at all. I mean, I know that we were in the ship, and then the next thing we were there, and you know, walking through this terrain. That's how I always remembered it, and so they just did a little bit at a time. I often wonder if I'll get more memories back as this goes along, because it's been years and years, and we're getting so much all the time and all these messages. And I said it wasn't once in a while, it was three, even four times a week sometimes, you know, that they were there, and then we would be gone. So my son being terminally ill, like I said, they were helping him a lot. I remember sitting in this ship, and they had some little instrument or that they used, and they took a little bit of bone from him, just a little bit. I remember them clipping a piece of his hair. They would do things like that that didn't hurt him in any way. He wasn't in any pain. And they were using those things, they said, to devise some kind of a medical thing that I don't know how to exactly that would be invented to help people and about stem cells back then, which I didn't have any idea what they were talking about, and that they were using these parts from him and his blood and so on to create some cures in the future. And I just was amazed. I can remember how I felt, you know, when so he was, David was always very calm and no problem, you know. It was just like when we would go look at all those babies all the time. And at first years I freaked out because I told you they were in that liquid, and I kept, oh, they're going to drown. And he said, no, Mom, they're fine, they're fine. And finally I had stood, they were creating not only their kind of babies, but what was called hybrids at that time, you know. So
right.
They were leading up to eventually getting to that part of us. And but I remember it took me quite a while to calm down about those babies.
Well,
one very important thing that happened to me that just stunned me. I was on the ship, and I knew immediately that there was somebody sitting across from me. Now, we were in like a circle, and just kind of like a metal. I'm going to call it metal because I don't know what everything's made out of on those. But the seating. And it was very plain there, but I knew somebody was looking at me. And I remember my eyes, I was looking at the floor and went out further. And then I saw the feet, and I went on up the knees, and I saw these kind of sandal-like and the robe. And I went on up, and I remember it was what we see like Jesus Christ. And I was just so in awe. This beautiful being, you know, that had came to Earth and gave his life, you know, to help. And I just was just fascinating. But I thought, here all this is combined. And when I was writing the book, I thought, how, give me the words to explain to people that this isn't trying to take away anyone's belief or religion, because we're all from the one source. It's all combined.
Right. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of people that have encountered like this Christed consciousness, and I think he's trying to, you know, just tell us that, you know, these higher mm-hmm. level beings do come and assist us. So while you feel
yes.
great despair and separation, they come and remind us that life is eternal. They exist forever. They're not dead. They're here
right.
to come help anytime. Mm-hmm. what I got from, there was one book about the people that were working with the dead, and they set up this organization that spanned over 100 years. So they knew that eventually the members would die, and they set up a system to communicate back and forth. And so eventually their members were bridging the veil, and they were using arrays on computers and the EVP machines and all kinds of ways of, they were sending pictures to their printers and all kinds of stuff. So at one point they said, they were answering questions, and they said, yeah, Jesus is here. He's like a sixth or seventh dimensional being. He comes down to lower dimensions and he helps us, but he's always connected. He's, you know, this is part of his project, like the earth is his project. And so he's always helping, so, you know, you can reach out, you can touch these people, talk to these people. Yeah, you said something earlier, and I thought, ask them. Just ask, before you go to sleep at night, ask them to start answering some of your questions. You have a lot of mysteries from all the years. I think you're ready. And, like have your journal when you wake up and just write down the answers, because that's what I've been doing. If I get up and just start writing and I don't let anybody interrupt me, and I don't answer the phone, don't turn on the computer, and I start getting the download from the night before. Okay, you were talking about the healing. So my friend Teresa J. Morris, her husband Thomas Morris was up on the craft, and they said to him at one point, if you stay here, we can keep you alive indefinitely. We can keep working on healing your body. He was terminal as well. And I was mm-hmm. talking to Cynthia Crawford before she passed. She's the mm-hmm. lady who was a major contactee, and she's a hybrid, and so she said, well, we've talked about the healing process, and I've just decided that I want to go back. You know, so she had made a decision that, no, I want to go on to the higher realms. And Thomas Morris, this pissed off his wife, but he said, no, I really don't want to just stay up there. I want to go home. I want to go back to Earth. I want to live out my days. And then I want to just go back. It's like they had an awareness of where you go when you're on the other side, you know, when you pass. Did David have an understanding of where he was going? And that's why he was so at ease with it?
He was. And I knew Cynthia real well, too. And David, she read his story, and she said, would he come and help me? You know, she was in pain and so on, and she wanted to go back. And I said, yes, I know he's hearing you now. So she and David became very well. And so I know that since she left, I saw her several times since she crossed over and back to the ship, and where they're both together working with others. So that was a wonderful thing. I would write her, what she wanted to say down as she was there. If I don't write everything down, I it's just so much day and night of incoming, you know, like you said, downloading, that I must write it down in order to always have it and say it correctly. But that made me really happy, because she had made me one of her little beings that resonated with my energy, you know, the beautiful
uh-huh.
little different species. And she said, now it has to have some light and air. And she was telling me about, how they have to have that. So when I got home, I brought it home from Arizona to Illinois in an open little soft canvas box, and I had a pillow just around it where it set up and could see out out of the window. And it was funny, because at night at a motel, boy, I'd bring it in, set it right on that table, you know. But it actually, I couldn't tell you the times. I have it in my bedroom where there's a lot of windows. And at nighttime, I have seen that move. I couldn't tell you how many times. And it will float right over to me, up over me, and I can hear the words, you know, hear her words. And one night, not just lately, before I came out here again, I came out of the bathroom, and where it sits there in the bedroom, it was glowing. It was glowing.
Oh.
It was beautiful green all the way in the room. And I lay in bed, and I just watched it and watched it, thinking, well, is it going to move this time? And it never moved, but, you know, it glowed till I ever fell asleep, which was quite a while. So I don't know what that was all about, but I'm very happy for her because she told me right after she passed how happy she was, and she just zoomed. I mean, she was gone and out of here, and there wasn't any waiting around. You know what I mean?
Oh yes, yeah, she was prepared and ready to go, and she knew where she was going.
She sure was.
She came to
she said to me, "Is David? Am I about ready?" One time, and I wasn't to tell the date, but I could tell her, "Yes, you know, it won't be long." And she was in a lot of pain, so I love her dearly. I'll miss her in human form. I have terribly, but I get to see and hear her and know that what makes me really happy that they're working together on that huge ship they're on. And, so that makes me feel really good.
Yeah. Well, she gave me a little mantis. I loved all her artwork, and for years she had a booth, and it was, you know, close to mine and at the various conferences. And I'd say, I can't take anything big, you know, I can't take anything heavy because I have to go all the way to Hawaii. So she was breaking down one day, and there was this little purple mantis. Because I have a mantis story, which was very loving, and she brought this little mantis. And so for years I had it, like, in a back room. Anyway, I had to close my bedroom because my roof was leaking, so I put it on my dresser, but then I closed my bedroom. And I walked by, I go, oh, you poor thing, you're back here. And so I brought it out I'm in another room living right now while my bedroom gets fixed. And it's like it's happy, but I've never seen it do anything. But I had a friend, Betsy, who bought like three or four, and one of them blew up on her.
Oh, wow.
She had taken a movie of it because she had one of those cat sitting systems, right? So her whole house had cameras in all the rooms because when she and her boyfriend would travel, they wanted to make sure that the cats were being taken care of and they weren't in any distress. So they had a system on their phone. So she showed me how it somehow got recorded, and it's like, look at this thing, and it started vibrating. It blew up. She goes, I'm not sure what that message was, but the other three were fine. She had like four of them. They were kind of a matching, and I think Cynthia was still alive, and she had some explanation about it. But they're very, it's like they're conscious, and they have agendas and souls and spirits and. I love mine. I walk past it every day now. I go, oh, Cynthia, I just loved her. She was, she came up to me at a party, and I think I traded one of my books for something with her one time, and she came back at the party, and she just looked at me, and she was crying, and I go, what? She goes, your story, your book was so beautiful. And I know I haven't told, you know, many copies, because my story, I think, is just so far out there. It even leaves the far out people, you know, wondering. But because I remember all these past lives on other planets, and so when I started to do my story, it was so complicated because it has all my different lifetimes. So I was weaving how, you know, the lifetimes are not just on this planet, but they're coming in from other realms, and anyway, I think it was too complex. I'm just going to rewrite it. I'm trying to make it simpler.
I bet it's beautiful.
But she got it. She got
it right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Pardon me?
I She got it though, because she where she was in her life, she understood it. She got it.
Oh, great.
And there's a couple people that have read it, but I haven't sold very many copies, so I really appreciate those who were brave enough to buy my book, because it's really far out. But that's who I am. I am, so far out. It's like the stranger and the stranger land phenomenon. And when I go to these conferences and people are talking about the lights in the skies or the grace took much time, I go, I've had a lifetime. Like you, they would come 2-3 times a week. It wasn't like
right.
I had a visit when I was 5. It's like, oh, no, this is ongoing and it's a regular basis. So Sasha and I have started to identify people like that. We call these people the ambassadors. It's
they use that term for us, ambassadors, yeah.
Right. And let's see, there's, what's her name from New Zealand? I just talked to her at the conference. Anyway, I'm drawing a blank. But there's about a dozen of them that are ambassadors. So they'll become aware that they're on, Elizabeth April from Canada, from Toronto. She said, yeah, I'm on board ship, and they're looking at me, and they're calling me the commander. They have some title for me. And she's going, what? And then she goes, oh, they're talking about me. And she knows, like you said, not only does she know the language, but she knows what to do. She knows how to run ships. She's obviously in a command position. And then she comes back, and she's a 22-year-old girl. I think she's about 25 years old now. So it's very interesting. But the languages, the different, I have found myself reading all these different languages. And I understand them completely. But Janet doesn't. But part of me understands it completely. Have you spoken these languages?
Or just have I them? Spoken any of it, did you say?
Yes,
No, I don't speak the language. I really don't. I just accepted everything they were teaching us, and I don't recall. I said I don't. I probably have many times with them, but I wouldn't have. And maybe under hypnosis, I would. It would probably come out then. But no, I don't just to sit down and start using it. But I do know what I'm a part of, just as David did, that we were, hybrids. And that was the thing that was hard, people that's afraid to talk. I know how they feel and how they feel they're going to be taken. And we led that hidden secret life all those years until the ETs told us it was time now to write the books. Then they wanted me talking about it, and which I've been doing, and start putting a bunch of the messages in the books, and I'll probably start the second one hopefully by the end of this year. But it was really something like you, me, many other experiences. We're not only living a human life here and trying to do our best at that, but we have a mind clogged with universal travel and life and other beings that we have always been with. So we really carry a lot in our brain. I don't know.
So what happened
that
they said
how we
it's
do
time.
It every
what
day? But I
yeah.
guess we, I've adjusted quite a bit. And when we were living the secret life and could not talk about it, even our family never knew about it. So when we were told then to start the book and so on like that, I went ahead and wrote the book. Before my family had, they had to read the book because
oh,
I thought,
yeah.
what a shock. I thought, what a shock that would have to be, And so
well, see,
it is a lot
to carry.
Well, see,
that's the thing.
Carry.
I wrote these
and
books and
live,
I don't think my family's
me?
Read it. I don't think my family's read my books, and I don't really care if they do. because I think they would be the ones to be most critical.
Mine are behind me. As a mother and a parent and our close bond, they would be with me 100%. One thing, they know that I would never be able to even make up something like that. It had to be true. And also, they've always known, though, that David and I lived in the other world, the paranormal spiritual world. And I mean, if somebody passes, usually I can just go sit down and immediately. I don't care if they've been on 20 minutes. I can usually just start getting, if they have information or able that they, if they know where they are and what's happened to them, I can get them through that. But we, David and I, both escorted souls many, many, many times that were still here and needed to go on and, get on the other side and get busy with things there. Some had been terrified of dying because of the fear we're taught in human ways through our life. And so we were real familiar with, we always called it escorting the souls over that needed that. We loved anything we could do to make things better and to get them on their way and where they needed to be, because after all, they're entering another new life of just joy and love and bliss and learning and choices they can make. And so this is just the dying out of this old life, and then we can go into our other life. But I love working in the paranormal world. I see things everywhere I go through the night. It's like Grand Central Station. It always has been. So many things are moving in and out, and I get a lot of messages that way, a lot of information. Sometimes it's just that they need to be guided on their way. So it's like our minds are just full day and night.
That's how I started as a young girl. The dead could see me seeing them, and so they were always asking me to help them and try to get through to their loved ones that were still alive. And same thing. I've helped them cross over numerous times to become aware that they are dead. A lot of them don't know that they're dead, and it's very, but I stopped it after a while. It was like I was working so hard, and I told my husband, I said, I'm not getting enough sleep at night. I'm working with the dead all the time, and I don't feel I'm getting to do my life. I'm doing their lives. So he helped me put up some boundaries, healthy boundaries around just everybody and anybody dropping in. But a year ago, when David Bowie and Prince died, those two were very powerful souls. So they both got through to me, and I actually was still connected in contact with, who died first? I think it was David Bowie died first, and he wasn't as comfortable with being dead as Prince. Prince was elated. And so Prince was, he came to me, and he was still with me, and my husband came over and sat beside me in the chair by my bed, and I said, honey, I'm still connected to Prince, and I'm like in this in-between worlds, right? I was in the other dimension, and I was communicating with him, and he was saying all kinds of things about how ecstatically happy he was. And then he went and got everybody that I liked. He said, I'm going to give you a gift. And I go, what? And I was laughing. I was so excited. And he brought over Leonard Nimoy, who had died the year before, Gene Roddenberry, John Lennon, all these people that I just admired. And he filled up my room with them. And I was telling Sasha, I go, oh, my God, he's bringing them. And he just brought them all. And he said, we're all still existing. We're all okay. We're all fine. It doesn't matter how we died. What happened? We're all here. And I wrote it in my journal. There was about 15 or 20 people there. They brought my parents and all kinds of stuff, and it was like a big reunion. And then we finally said, okay, well, thank you. I've got to go, do my day. Thank you for sharing with me. So I've just had, besides the ET stuff, I've had these wonderful experiences with the dead. And
oh yeah,
it's thrilling when you get them to move on. And some of them will kind of possess somebody else. They'll attach to somebody else for a while. And in therapy, Sasha's really good at that. He goes, "Who do we have here?" And then they'll speak. You know, once they are identified as being attached to somebody, then he'll say, "Well, you got to, he'll do this whole thing that gets them to leave the person that they're attached to, the living, and then they move on, and the person." So I guess it's called like an exorcism, but they're not always mean. They just happen to be lost, and they might relate to somebody that has shared interests with them. Often it'll be addiction. So if you're a smoker, and somebody died, they might come over because they're attracted to, because they want to have a cigarette or something. They can only have it vicariously by being around you, or if you're a drinker. So anyway, I think we need to wrap this up. We're running out of time. What would you like to say in conclusion? We can always do more shows. This was fun.
Oh, gosh, I've enjoyed it so very much. And it's so wonderful to hear your experiences because it's like you say, being from a very small place, I feel very alone in being able to share much of anything, so I don't usually at all. And this is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful show. You guys help so many people, and I'm so proud to know you. And I'm so happy we finally met in person. That was great.
Yes, love. Well, I want to let you know that I would love it if somehow we could work it out that you'll be part of Stargate to the Cosmos, which is a conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, October 25th, the last week in October, this year, 2018, and I'm waiting for my web geek to get my website up so I can start promoting it. She'll have it ready in a week or so. But, I'd love it if we'll get your PowerPoint together, okay? We'll make it happen.
Okay, and you will, and I would love to. And I think what you are doing is wonderful. And I really look forward to that conference. And thank you so much again. And you have a good night. Okay.
I've got the rest of the day. I'm going to be working till midnight, but I love my life. It's a very interesting life, and it's a paranormal life like yours. And, when I go to sleep at night, I go, "What's going to happen now?" You never know, because every night you have something going on.
I know. Well, that's the fun of it, though. I love mine, too.
Yeah. So we'll do some more, dear, and love and blessings. And this show will be available in about an hour or so for those that want to pass it on to your friends and have them take a listen. So that's it for today. Much love and blessings and aloha. Let me find my exit music. Where's my exit music? Okay. Here, we'll play this. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ruth Ann. We'll talk to you soon. Aloha.
Aloha.